2007, and I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 16A. I think we...
So maybe one of those...
Scott?
She's not the advocate for that, it's not here. It's being called in the system.
Which one? Okay, we're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 16A, and we'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 364. Andy.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 364 is a measure that would establish a mental health consumer advisory council to advise that the Department of Human Services Director and the provision of mental health services. It would require DHS to develop a policy that supports and promotes self-determination. And it would require that at least 20% of the membership of all task forces, commissions, advisory groups, and committees established by public body relating to persons with mental health or addiction issues be consumers of mental health or addiction services.
Mr. Bischoff, I think you have something to tell us.
Good morning, Chair Toomey, committee members. My name is Don Bischoff. I'm legislative assistant to Senator Bill Morissette. Here just to present a couple of amendments that were, in one case, requested by committee members and one that was requested by DHS. And I'll let the DHS representative explain the dash 5. The dash 4 that you should have in front of you makes the change from may to shall in that. It says the department shall adopt rules to implement the section. There was some concern last time that some of the committee members, I believe, wanted to be sure that the department would adopt rules that would spell it out just exactly what was expected under this, or to clarify any questions that might come up regarding the bill and the 20% membership clause and so forth.
Okay, good. Any questions on that change? Thank you so much, Mr. Bischoff. And Una, are you wanting to speak on this, or is there somebody else? Was there anybody from the department? Yes.
I did want to mention one other thing, Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
In the time that's passed since the initial hearing, the Association of Oregon Counties has gone on record in favor of passage of this bill. So the counties, in particular, are comfortable with the requirements in here.
And maybe we can hear from the counties in a minute. Thank you so much. Go ahead.
Good morning. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, my name is Mike Morris. I'm the Quality Improvement and Certification Manager for Addictions and Mental Health Division with the Department of Human Services. And the Dash A5 amendments essentially were intended to clarify the requirements of the committees. And so it was mainly just taking the language and putting it in a list form as opposed to just kind of a run-on sentence. So that was the only clarification. We had concern regarding how it was written before, that the ORS reference to the public meeting laws, you know, actually added a requirement in the sense of all these committees and internal committees would then be subject to the public meeting laws. And so this just clarified that.
Oh.
That was the change. So
the A5 would replace the A3, correct?
Chair Tomei, Don Bischoff again, that is correct.
Okay. Any questions of Mike? Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Mr. Bischoff. All right. Can we hear from the county, please?
Why is it dash 8 versus dash 3?
Why is it dash 3? We're not...
Why does it say dash A3? I'm just curious.
Oh, amendment.
Amendment 5.
That's,
but other times you just say dash 3.
Because the bill is amended, it's
been
amended
side.
On the Senate side, so it's 364A.
Thank you.
I think that the committee administrator said you're learning your committee ABCs.
We can find another administrator.
I'm sorry. Excuse our humor. Okay.
Chair Tomei, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Nickel, Executive Director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. You asked some questions last week, and one of them was, have the counties taken a position? They did take a position on Friday in the Human Services Committee and on Monday in their regular committee. So they are in support of this bill with the amendments.
Thank you so much, Gina. Any questions? Dr.? I'm trying to remember your maiden name, Dr. I want to say Dr.
Furman.
Nickel.
Furman.
Furman Nickel. Thank you.
Gina.
Okay, thank you so much. So we had some concerns on the committee about the membership of this group. So are we satisfied with the membership? Everybody's okay? All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 364A.
Representative Gelser moves the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 364A. Any questions, any concerns, any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Madam Chair, I would also move the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 364A.
Representative Gelser moves the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 364A. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. Representative Gelser?
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 364A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 364A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? I think we've got a good bill here, colleagues. Okay. Great. Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gillian?
Aye.
Representative Kotek?
Excused?
Representative
Mellon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Chair Kinney?
Aye.
Senate Bill 364A, as amended, is going to the floor with the due passes the committee and is going to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Gelser, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I would be happy to.
Great. Any other discussion? We will close the work session on Senate Bill 364A. We will open up the work session on Senate Bill 16. And we have someone who would like to speak on this. Andy, first tell us what's going on here.
Thank you, Chair. Senate Bill 16A is a measure that would require hospice programs to provide utilization data to the Oregon Health, for the Oregon Hospice Association, and for the Oregon Hospice Association to compile data from all programs in the state and to report to the Department of Human Services. It would also require that all hospices not accredited currently by the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Oregon Health Organizations to be accredited by the OHA, and would require all programs to report data, as I summarized previously.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Tomei, members of the committee, I'm Ann Jackson, Director of the Oregon Hospice Association, and it seemed there were some things left unsaid last Friday
right.
when we were talking, and so I thought I would make myself available. I didn't really have an awful lot more to offer, but I wanted to make myself available.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson. Give us a brief summary of your testimony last
Friday. What I attempted to talk about hospice, and I had a PowerPoint presentation
right.
I was looking
right.
at how well end-of-life care is in Oregon and the fact that, indeed, there is room for improvement. I should go on, and these are some issues that have come up over the past several years that we felt that we could address by new legislation. And so, therefore, we asked Senator Johnson to carry a bill for us that would do several housekeeping measures. One of them that I felt might be of concern was the one that would define a hospice program as an institution for purposes of ORS 146.100 regarding death investigations. And this is one of those issues that has been interpreted. The law itself has been interpreted differently from county to county, and so that some hospices are required to report every death that occurs, when it occurs. Some hospices have been deputized and are asked to do other kinds of things. We've had an instance, more than one, where the local law enforcement officials have gone into the home of a patient.
I'm going to stop you there, Ms. Jackson,
yes.
Because I don't think this bill deals with that. If you could just talk with us about this bill, that would be really helpful to us.
Well, this bill would define hospices as an organ, as
an institution.
As an institution, so that this would not have to occur. It would clarify it for the...
I see.
And institutions and hospitals are included in that particular section as... agencies that would not have to report deaths, because the deaths there all have attending physicians, the deaths are expected, and so on and so forth. And one of the primary reasons those deaths are looked at is because of drugs, and we feel there are better ways of dealing with that, and there are many other issues that are being dealt with to cover drug take-back programs and so on and so forth that would encompass hospice.
Thank you for clarifying that. I really appreciate it.
And then the other was adding nurse practitioners to the clinicians that were allowed, the requirement to require both accreditation and certification of hospices that would be equivalent to licensure under Oregon law. And presently, there is an option that they are accredited or certified. And the Oregon Hospice Association and the Joint Commission are identified as agencies, both recognized as accrediting bodies in the state of Oregon. The Joint Commission is also a national organization. OHA is not. We happen to be a very affordable program for hospices to go to, looking at high-quality hospice care, good standards, looking at best practices going into the hospices.
And could you let us know, Ms. Jackson, who does the accreditation for you?
We have an accrediting surveyor on our staff who does this. At present, we have several nurses who are volunteers from various programs who go out and do this. Should we shift this, should this law be passed, we'll institutionalize this more. We are an organization that maintains arm's-length relationships with all of the hospices so that we're never in a position of any conflicts regarding being beholden to a hospice, for instance, that's paying us huge membership dues. Only 10% of our funding does come from membership dues.
So the Oregon Hospice Association itself does the accreditation,
yes,
is that correct?
We are an accrediting body. Our board does approve it, but we are a very diverse board.
Hospices can also be accredited by the Joint Commission,
which is a national organization, and there are several other national organizations that don't yet come into Oregon that could conceivably be included in this.
Okay,
they
great.
Aren't limited to the Oregon Hospice Association by any means.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative Maurer?
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. Just so the committee knows, can you give us a comparison in cost for the hospices to be accredited between JCO and your organization?
Chair Tomei, Representative Moore, the cost is something the last I heard was $15,000 to $17,000 for the Joint Commission for a three-year accreditation. Our charges are less than $1,000 every 2 years.
Thank you.
At this time.
So I'm going to follow up on that. Why the difference in the charge?
Because we are a public benefit organization, and our goal is to make sure that every Oregonian has access to high-quality care. This is part of the program services we feel are important to offer to the people in the state of Oregon.
And, Madam Chair, as a follow-up to that, JCO, the Joint Commission, is the accrediting body for hospitals. And hospitals pay huge sums to be accredited every 3 or 4 years. And in fact, now they've gone to no notice accreditation. And it's one of those devils in the detail that you are obligated to be accredited, but yet it costs a huge amount of money, and it's, quote, a volunteer organization. And so they have a huge hammer over your head.
Okay. Good information to have. Representative Callan.
Thank you. I just have a question, and I apologize. I had to miss the meeting that you did the PowerPoint, so maybe you explained it. But the addition of nurse practitioner makes a great deal of sense to me. I'm wondering why physician assistant is not included in the list of clinicians as well.
Chair Tomei, Representative Callan, physician assistants are not recognized under Medicare as able to be attending physicians or have the same prescribing, et cetera, privileges. But the interdisciplinary team does not exclude physician assistants. They would be allowed to be in other roles other than prescribed members of the interdisciplinary team. However, we also have included a definition for the patient's attending physician that adds clinicians to the extent that we expect that in the state of Oregon, physician assistants will be allowed to do this shortly.
Follow up?
There are some other pieces of legislation running through, but there are other disciplines listed as part of the team that are also not prescribing entities.
I'm sorry. I'm talking about the Medicare hospice benefit. Hospices are required to provide their services under that, under the requirements of the conditions of participation, even when they are taking care of individuals who are not Medicare eligible. Therefore, the hospices are somewhat limited into who they can, who can be on the specific interdisciplinary team. We've broadened the Oregon legislation to be more inclusive than Medicare is. So at this time, physician assistants are not identified by name as a person or a group that can serve on the interdisciplinary team. Under Medicare, but not under the Oregon Oregon.
I'm going to follow up with him, even though you're next, because I know he's going to respond to this. Representative Mauer.
Madam Chair, so that you are expecting that PAs are going to be added to this list from Medicare?
We don't know that they will from Medicare. I think that at some point they are. There are new conditions of participation being introduced that will be implemented before May of 2008. We don't know exactly what's in it. Physician assistants are defined and legislated across this country very differently from state to state. We're trying to make this law be as inclusive as possible for everyone, for Oregon.
Thank you. Representative.
Madam Chair, and I understand the pursuit of wanting to do an addition for, you know, adding nurse practitioner to this and everything for the death investigation. Any discussion at all with the state medical examiner's office regarding this?
Yes, we did. Representative Olson, Chair Tomei, we did talk with Karen Gunson of the state medical examiners. She is deliberately not opposing nor supporting this particular segment, and she is very well aware that we have put it into the law.
Any follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay. Because I used to be a deputy medical examiner in a couple different counties and everything over the years and everything, and I understand the need for going out and doing even a precursor type, or cursory, excuse me, just getting it connected with drugs, sorry. going out to just kind of check in on a death. What's happening, any conversation at all with your county examiners?
With some county examiners, I talk with Jeff McLennan frequently in Clackamas County, and he's one of those who thinks that, you know, he's interpreting the law, Chapter 146, that hospice deaths are among those that should be reported. On the other hand, we have most other county district attorneys think that this is that isn't what the law says at all. It says that deaths that are must be investigated are those deaths that occur that when a patient does not have an attending physician, when there are suspicious circumstances, when the death is not expected. Every single hospice death that occurs in the state of Oregon, other than those who might die within 24 hours of admission, clearly has an attending physician that's been following them for a long period of time. Their deaths are their impending deaths are certified as occurring. They are expected, and certainly if there is any reason to believe that a death is occurring under suspicious circumstances, if a patient, for instance, should fall out of bed and as a result have a concussion or subdural hematoma, of course, that would be one that the hospices absolutely should report. So you've got the hospice team in this patient's home frequently over a period of time, and it does not alleviate the hospices from reporting unexpected deaths or any of these kinds of things. And this particular section of the law indicates that deaths that occur in institutions or hospitals within 24 hours of admission must be reported. We agree that deaths that would occur within 24 hours within a hospice admission should also be reported.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This discussion just caused me to think of...
Representative Gilliam asked, and I am so sorry. He just looked so offended.
You know, I would not want to offend Representative Gilliam. That would be an unfortunate way to start my day.
No, I'm sorry, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you so much. Just a quick word, if you would, Ms. Jackson, about your board. You mentioned your board, and I'd be interested to know the makeup of the board and the current membership.
Our board is to be between 12 and 15 members. We look for geographic distribution. We are a statewide organization. One-third of those individuals have management responsibilities with hospice programs. One-third have responsibilities among the healthcare community. One-third represent community members. The board deals with what is good for the Oregon Hospice Association. We are a public benefit organization incorporated under 501c3, charitable. Our first responsibility is absolutely to the public. We are not the so-called provider protection organizations that some C6s and some C4s are challenged about being. We're always looking to the public.
Thank you.
Now, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to add a comment to the discussion about investigations and the conversation spurred from me. I've sadly had the opportunity to be a part of some families who have had children on hospice as they've died, and watched that extra step that they need to go to as they know that the end is coming, to be coordinating with law enforcement and others to try to prevent needing to have law enforcement come out at that very difficult time. So I really appreciated your response, and knowing that if there are suspicious circumstances that hospice itself might report. But I think for these families, part of the benefit of hospice is that ability to experience death with your family, and for those family members to have that in a very comforting way. And I think that the intervention of law enforcement really can disrupt that, the peace and the that very difficult time. So I'm pleased to see this happen so that families won't have to be spending the little time that they have left in those last weeks coordinating with local law enforcement to be sure that a uniformed person isn't coming to their home immediately after a death.
Thank you, Representative Gelser. Any other questions? Thank you so much, Ms. Jackson.
Thank
sorry
you,
you had to come back again. Sorry we didn't
it
have more time for you last
pleasure,
week.
It is my pleasure, Chair Tomei. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Are we in work session, aren't we?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 16 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moved that Senate Bill 16A go to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Gilser? Aye. Representative Gilliam? Aye. Representative Kojak? Aye. Representative Mellon? Aye. Representative Olson? Aye. Representative Olson? Aye.
Senate Bill 16A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Who hasn't carried a bill lately? Cowan, you haven't, have you?
I guess not.
Would you like to?
Sure.
Good. Representative Cowan will carry the bill. I will close the public hearing, I mean the work session on Senate Bill 16A. Thanks again.
There she is. Madam Chair?
Yes.
I was wondering if we could suspend the rules for me to be able to vote on 364.
Oh. Madam Chair, I move that we suspend the rules to allow Representative Kotek to vote on Senate Bill 364A.
Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Representative Kotek, how do you vote?
Thank you, colleagues. I vote aye on 364A.
Good.
Thank you,
all
Madam
right.
Chair.
You're welcome. All right. We're going to open up the work session on Senate Bill 379. Senator Walker, my old roommate. Well, she's not old, but my former roommate.
Yeah. Well, Madam Chair, I am getting old. I turned 51 in just a couple of weeks.
That's just a kid.
Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7, and I did enjoy being your roommate in the old days, and Senator Margaret Carter is now my roommate, and we still have as much fun.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for inviting me back. You have the -A3 amendment in front of you that you and I have discussed on email and by phone. I support this amendment, and it would delete the sections, the lines 22 through 25, section 7, on page 4, and replace it in its entirety with this language. This language is great. No longer do we have to, we just say the department shall. There's no diligent efforts here. They have to do it. And it's limited in what they're telling the reporting party, simply that the contact with the child was made, whether the department determined that abuse occurred, and whether services are provided. That's all that needs to be told to the reporter. None of the other details, unless they are allowed to know that information under the law. And so this is fine. It's just amazing to me that it took us this long to finally get this language. And I understand the department drafted an administrative rule on March 20th. And this is their administrative rule. And I want it in statute because this has caused me a lot of grief. So I'm happy with this, Madam Chair. And if you could pass this bill today, I would be just delighted. I think we'd go a long way to train folks about how to recognize child abuse. And we also have the feedback so that you know that that call you made was actually answered and it didn't go into a black hole. And that's all we're asking, is that people know that their call made a difference.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Any questions of this great legislator? Thank you. Okay, so this is the only amendment that's needed, correct?
Correct. No other changes are needed to this bill, Madam Chair.
Great.
And I guarantee you that we will concur when you send it back over to our side.
Good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Walker. All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would move the -3 amendments to Senate Bill 379A.
Representative Gelser, thank you, moves the Senate amendments to Senate Bill 379.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I just had a question about DHS's concurrence with these amendments.
Sure, we can bring
her
up.
Could we just maybe get a yes
sure.
or
oh, no
nod? Or?
That's fine.
Appreciate it. No, thank you.
She's excited.
She loves community meetings.
I do. Chair Tomei, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Una Swanson. I'm the Child Protective Services Program Manager of the Department of Human Services. And the language that you see before you is exactly what we have in our administrative rule, and we're definitely supportive of that. Thank you.
Great. And thank you, Una. Was gracious enough to share that language with me when we were negotiating back and forth, and so it was just perfect, and we really appreciate that. Thank you, Ms. Swanson.
Thank you. I appreciate having you on the record.
You bet. All right. We have a motion on the floor to add the A3 amendment to Senate Bill 379. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That passes. So, Representative Gelser.
Madam Chair, I would move Senate Bill 379A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves Senate Bill 379A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Susan, would you call the roll, please?
Representative
Cowan?
Aye. Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative
Kotek?
Aye.
Representative
Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Chair Tomei?
Aye. Senate Bill 379A, as amended, has gotten the constitutional majority and passes. And Representative Gelser, would you, that's all I need to do, right? And Representative Gelser, would you carry that bill on the floor?
Yes, please.
Thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 379A. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I just want to make an announcement about House Bill 3113. Which is the, and Madam Chair, we talked about this yesterday. It was the bill about reporting of child abuse in child care.
Oh, right.
Facilities and that crack between law enforcement and DHS. And it was a push to move this to rules to make an amendment. And we are not going to do that. It's going to come to the floor and we're going to pass it. And so if you hear a rumor about that being re-referred to rules, that's not going to happen.
Any discussion about that?
No, I just want to thank Representative Moore.
Moore?
No.
Thanks, Gilman.
Any other discussion? All right. I will see you at 8:30 on Wednesday. I close the House Committee on Services and Women's Wellness. Thank you, Susan. You did.